Hello, everyone. I am Smriti. I'm the CEO and co-founder at Stack. We're basically an investment app built exclusively for Gen Z and millennials.
एक मिनट रुक जाओ, रेडी होने दो. चलो, ये कर लेते हैं. This could be a great intro.
Smriti belongs to a new wave of fintech founders in India. These are young 20-ish founders who are building financial products for Gen Z. This new generation of founders are building products with a design-first philosophy, creating products that focus on gamification and social. And what we are witnessing is the birth of the next generation of powerful leaders who will dominate the conversation for decades to come. Smriti was an active equity investor herself, which led her to becoming the go-to person for friends and family who wanted to invest. This made her realize the opportunity to build a product that becomes a go-to for young people who want to invest. And this was the birth of Stack Finance. Here's Smriti telling Akshay Dutt about building a complete one-stop shop for all the money management needs of Gen Z.
I started reading a lot about Warren Buffett, John Bogle, a lot of, you know, these people who I used to work with, basically my managers at these startups. They started, referring me to these various resources and books, etc., courses. So at that point, I think I was earning about 25K a month, and almost all of that went into investments. I started exploring value investing. And just when I got into value investing, I realized that, you know, this is something that nobody has any idea about. During the day, I was in college. In the evening, I would be working as an intern. And in the night, I would be doing all of this research and, you know, sort of working on my own, figuring out what are the different companies, basically reading through their statements, through their whatever basically public information was available. I started realizing the problem statements actually early on. At some point, in fact, even my friends and family had started coming to me for recommendations that, you know, you seem to be doing really well and all. So that's the perception we have in India, right? If somebody is just so savvy about finance or investing, people just take them for experts and they start basically seeking out advice from them. And yeah, at that point, I realized that, you know, this is such a luxury. I mean, people want, they know that it's good for their money, it's good for their financial lifestyle, but they just don't have access to the right instruments, to the right platforms, or even right people, in fact. So I think that's when all the things started becoming very clear to me, all the problem statements, what is the status quo in India, what is the behavior like when it comes to investing in India. And yeah, so I think that was it.
Why did you see a problem statement there? Because in a way, mutual funds were they were born to solve this, right? Like a layman cannot do equity research on his own, so put money in a mutual fund which has a team of professionals researching and picking stocks on behalf of you.
Yes. So I mean, yes, mutual funds are supposed to solve that problem. They are, they basically have a manager who's supposed to basically take care of all the corpus within that mutual fund. But the point is that, do you even know what mutual fund should you invest in? I mean, there are so many options when it comes to even mutual funds right now. People don't understand the pros and cons also of mutual funds, what to look at, how much time should you be invested into mutual funds? What are the different types of mutual funds? I mean, there are a plethora of categories. There are tons of mutual funds. I think it's more than 7,000 right now in India. It's a Herculean task to be able to figure out what mutual fund is right for you, where should you invest. And people generally just go by the popular mutual funds or the recommended mutual funds that you see on these websites, you know, popping up. I mean, that's what I've seen. I mean, that's the behavior. My friends would just go by these suggestions, or they would be asking someone else who's investing in their office or, you know, their family. But the problem...
Or there is that financial advisor industry, like people who earn commission from mutual fund sales. So they would probably tap their network and recommend where to invest.
Yeah, so I think that's where the difference lies. So that's the difference I can see in the generations now. So my father used to rely on these people. I mean, I still know that there is this, his acquaintance who would recommend these investing schemes and mutual funds, etc. to him. And he was a mutual fund distributor himself. He would earn commissions on all of this, right? That's a generation difference I'm seeing. Now, my friends, my family, my, let's say, cousins, for us, it... the investing behavior has changed a bit. I mean, things after going digital, especially, we do not really rely on these people. I would say full-fledged portfolio management services that there are in India, they're still very expensive. So I would say that for people like me, for people especially in the middle and upper middle class, it's still very inaccessible. You only get access to these agents and, you know, people who are sort of mediators in between. But then, I mean, nobody wants to take those, I mean, make those offline efforts, right? So now we have a lot of digital platforms. There's so many apps, there's so many websites and platforms which are distributing mutual funds. All you have to do is just make an account there, transfer the funds, and that's it. Literally, that's it. So I think the process itself has become really easy now. The only problem now is that's what I'm saying, that, you know, now people, they don't rely on that particular advisor per se. Now what they rely on is the advice that's there on Google, that's there on these blogs or even on those websites, whatever is being promoted.
So think, YouTube influencers.
Correct. Oh, yes. YouTube influencers. So I think that's how the behavior has shifted recently. And I think the problem is still the same. People just want the best for themselves. They don't want to do the hard work and they want the best advice, which is available for free. So I think the requirements are still the same over the time. It's just the means have changed, I guess.
So you got this insight towards end of college. So tell me about the journey from getting that insight towards end of your BTech to becoming a founder, starting up a business around this insight.
Yeah, it's been a long journey, definitely. So basically, I graduated from the college and I aimed to pursue MBA after that, after working for some time. And that's when I moved to a different city. I moved to Delhi and I started basically hanging out with somehow I got, introduced to a lot of founders. And that's when that was my introduction.
This is when you joined EXL, like
Yes. Yeah, correct. So that was when I got introduced to this ecosystem and I started interacting with these people and I realized that their lives are just so much more interesting. I mean, the passion towards what they're solving, it actually drives them day in, day out. And of course, I mean, for me who was working at a corporate, it was like totally different. I was still working for a bank. I was working for Citibank in the Mexico region. So I realized that, you know, whatever projects that we were working on, so that's a different side of the story. I mean, that's just my personal life. And I realized that, you know, whatever projects we were working on, whatever solutions we were sort of proposing, all of that was like going through a very bureaucratic process. You know, everything that, I mean, I really love to work when I can see the impact of my work in any form being made. But unfortunately, when you're working for such big corporates, such big giants, it's very difficult to see, you know, what change are you making in the shorter period of time. And that becomes a little inconvenient for me because, I mean, I really want to see that if I'm working at some place, if I'm working for something, I am just making, even the slightest difference would be really, I mean, would be a reward for me. And I could not see that happening. And then because I was working at a bank, I realized that how these financial institutes even work. I mean, how they work is just completely different. It's just almost opposite of how startups work. And that's when I started realizing that, you know, whatever change that's needed, whatever innovation that's needed, it can only be brought up by these startups and not definitely the corporates, these banks and these big institutes, because they have their own complications to handle. They're working on these heavy balance sheets. They have so much pressure of their shareholders and so many things they have to take care of. Startups, on the other hand, are very flexible. They can take decisions faster. They're much more agile in the longer run. So I think that's when I started feeling the difference, identifying the difference. And these friends of mine, they would just encourage that, you know, if you just want to work on this, why don't you just start up? Why don't you try your hands on something of your own? And I just wouldn't get enough confidence for some time. And then I barely worked for, I think, 10 or 11 months. And last 2-3 months, I decided that I want to quit at some point and I want to start up. I mean, I had given up my MBA dreams. I realized that, the earlier I start, better it is. And And it was a great decision. I mean, now when I look back, I realize that I should have started way before. So, yeah, I think after that, I quit. After I think about 11 months, I had quit. And after that, hustle started, the real hustle. And it's a hell of a journey, I think. For somebody who's a first-time entrepreneur, somebody who's that young, it's very hard to get people to trust you. It's very hard for you to be able to build a business right from scratch. And now that I look back, I realize that even, I mean, it's been, what, 3 years or something? And things have changed. I mean, now when I see, you know, my college juniors, them wanting to start up, they have so many resources available. They have so much support. And I might sound like an oldie now, but even when I look back, I see that, I mean, I had literally zero means. I mean, I had taken so many wrong decisions. I realize now, there were so many things I was always confused about, so many things I could have done differently now that I look back. But of course, your experience make you who you are.
But tell me about that that roller coaster. Like, what were those highs and lows? What kind of mistakes did you make? So you quit your job. You were how old then when you quit? Like 24, 25?
No, I'm 25 right now.
Sorry. Okay. About 22, 23, yeah, something like that.
Yes.
And you wanted to do a fintech startup. Like, you wanted to do something around helping people invest smarter. So it's a fairly, I mean, if you're not from that space, it's fairly intimidating, no? Like, it's a regulated space, and there must be some, I mean, there must be so much stuff to figure out. Like, you know, so what was your plan? Did you think that, let me start something and then build it up? And or did you say that, okay, let me go and get some investors, and once I have money, then I can use money to solve the challenges? Like, you know, what approach did you want to take?
So yeah, I mean, I went in with zero plan. I mean, I had no planning whatsoever. I just knew that I would start up from scratch. I would need some help. I would need a team, definitely. And of course, investors. I would need some capital eventually. But I never realized that there would be so many regulatory hurdles. There would be, I mean, financial services, as they say, is, you know, as it's the area of gray hair. It's dominated by gray hair, but I just thought that startups are should not be so difficult, but turns out it's very difficult. I mean, to build a fintech startup, it's just a lot of struggle. And now I realize that all the hype that's created around these fintech startups is just totally worth it. I'm not saying because I'm a founder myself, but because it's just very hard. So, yeah, I went in with that problem statement itself. I just, first thing I wanted was a team, and the second was capital. And I started looking out for people who could, who would be willing to start up. In fact, there were a lot of...
Like co-founders or employees? Like
anybody. I mean, I was just looking out for... So, okay, by that time, I had a reasonable amount of savings. So I did have some capital to run for some time, which I had used eventually. So I had bootstrapped for some time. So I would basically be looking out for anybody who would be willing to freelance, of course, at a much cheaper price. People who would just want to start up as co-founders maybe, or just, you know, team members in general, employees. And over the time, you know, I started talking to a lot of people. I went to a lot of these events and started networking. I was also pitching to a lot of investors, interacting with them. And I think things started slowly and slowly building up. There were, of course, a lot of lows and a lot of highs as well. People are not willing to join. I mean, now there's just so much hype about startups, you know, startups paying you so high, people about ESOPs, people are much more aware. They're much more willing to join startups. Back then, startup was a risk. If you were joining a startup, it was plain risk. So that's what I was hearing all the time from people who I was, you know, interacting with. It was very difficult to get.
What was it that you were building? Like, you used your savings to build something. What was that like?
Okay, so basically we started out, I basically wanted to start out with a platform that helps people to invest outside of India. So for some reason, I just realized that from the people I was interacting with, everybody just at that point wanted to invest in the US or in other, you know, stock exchanges. So I wanted to basically build a platform that would help people to invest overseas, but at much cheaper rates and much easily as compared to, you know, opening a brokerage account into whatever country that's needed, etc. So there were a lot of pivots, of course. I started with this problem statement. After that, I realized that the remittance services are just way too complicated. It's just way too expensive. And this problem cannot be solved until remittances are solved. And so at that point, again, there was this blockchain boom like it is right now. And everybody was talking about cryptocurrencies and, you know, blockchain applications, etc. And I talked to a lot of people. I, in fact, started doing my own research on blockchain. I realized that remittance can actually be solved through blockchain if, you know, the fiat can be converted into crypto instead. And so I started, you know, exploring that as a solution. After a couple of months, I, of course, realized that it was just way too early for something like that to happen, especially...
The volatility is too high, no? And the transaction costs, like converting rupee to Bitcoin, Bitcoin back to dollar. And in between, if the Bitcoin price fluctuates, then...
Like... Exactly, yeah. I mean, that was still not so much of a problem as regulatory hurdles were. In India, if you're planning to... I mean, back then, if you were planning to, you know, build something on blockchain, it was like a big no. So I mean, it was very difficult to execute.
Yeah, no banks would give you a payment gateway to...
Exactly. It was just very hard. Yeah, everybody would just love the idea. It was very fascinating, I mean. But the execution was just way too hard. So that's when at that point, I had some people who had joined me anyway. There were a couple of team members.
But what were you all doing? Like were you actually like coding or
yes,
were you?
Yes. Like, yeah, we had started building an MVP to test out things. And we were, you know.
So this was like a front end part of it you must have been building.
Even the back end. So we had started, interacting with the partners overseas, basically brokers, even some blockchain players also who were providing remittance services and all. So we started building, basically testing out their APIs, building an MVP and all. So it was like a full-fledged MVP only, not just front-end. Very soon we realized that we would have to pivot. It's just way too difficult and it cannot be done. We were way ahead of the time at that point. So, I think that happened. And after that, we pivoted a bit and we thought that let's just remove blockchain here. And instead of overseas investments, let's just simplify investments here first. I mean, that was just... I would say my personal interest of investing overseas that I was trying to solve for others as well. But then I realized keeping that aside, even investing itself is very complicated right now. I mean, as I told you, even if, you know, people are investing into mutual funds, it just is very difficult. It's a hassle to be able to track your portfolio, build it over the time and take your own decisions. And fortunately enough, at that point, retail investors in India were exploding like anything. I mean, even now it is. I mean, investing is no more, a concept only available for HNIs what HNIs are aware of. It's something that has become really mainstream now. People are seeking out for more investment options. They're much more aware in India as compared to what it was before. So I think it was a really good time for us to be building a solution that actually caters to this mass population of investors that's exploding now in India.
Isn't Paytm Money the same thing? What did you see as the gap that, like, say, a Paytm Money was not solving?
Same thing. So Paytm Money and other solutions alike. I think the only problem that I face, even as a user I face till now, is that... it is a good means for me to be able to buy and sell whatever I need. Definitely it is. I mean, the user experience has improved a lot. They have put everything is now digital thanks to India Stack. I think they've paved the way to be able to build all that, foundation that's needed for investors to be able to execute everything at least. But the problem still persists that I will only be able to buy once I know what is right for me, once I know what I am supposed to get invested into. And I thought that entire process is just way too research driven or way too, DIY for people. People just, one, they don't have time. I mean, they don't have time to do all the research to acquire that right knowledge to be able to do that research for themselves. Second is that the knowledge gap is also way too much. I mean, people in India right now, everybody is getting more and more aware about investing and how it is right for you, how you have to grow your money over the time. But yet nobody is ready to acquire that knowledge. Nobody is ready to actually study about it. Nobody is really ready to learn the concepts of investing. People only rely on these Instagram 15 seconds, 30 second reels and, you know, 5 minute videos on YouTube. So I think that's
so where, like, Paytm Money essentially is just an execution platform. Like, once you have a strategy, but to build a strategy, that was missing, which you identified as a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, in fact, for that matter, most of the platforms right now in India, they're just a marketplace of, you know, whatever you call
it. There's execution, like you go there to execute a trade, but not to build a strategy.
Yeah. Exactly. So you can see a lot of options, but what to pick and how to pick is what you need to figure out. So I think that was the gap that I could see. And, you know, we just thought that.
And one, like, you saw that gap from the perspective of mutual funds as the asset class or everything, like mutual fund equities or like.
I think everything. It's mostly, I mean, investing is a more comprehensive, a process. I mean, it's not just equities. It could be anything. In fact, people in India, I mean, what, 4% of their household savings right now, around 4% is into equity. And rest, literally everything is into other asset classes, whether it's gold, property, insurance, or anything. So I think investing itself is a really comprehensive concept. And here in India, equity is like, I mean, probably I think second last in its composition. But yes, I think, so one of the problems, in fact, was that we want to provide something which is more diversified, something which is more comprehensive. It should cater to everything that people want. In fact, even cryptocurrencies. So why only stocks or why only mutual funds? If people want to invest into, let's say, gold, if they want to invest into cryptocurrencies, it should be able to cater to their needs, given that they have the risk appetite to sort of tolerate the ups and lows of that particular portfolio. So I think asset class was not more of a focus for us. What we wanted to do was basically democratize this entire wealth advisory for people. So it should no longer be, you know, a luxury for middle class or for commoners like us, everyday investors like us. Right now, only HNIs in India, they get these services of wealth advisors. In fact, for me also, I mean, only when I started up and after we had gotten some capital and all, I got these services from banks. They're coming to me saying that, you know, we can give you wealth advisory and we can assign some wealth manager to you and all. And I was like, nobody came to me when I was working. Nobody came to me when I was an employee, no? So that's what happens. It's way too expensive. It's way too inaccessible for everyday investors like us. So I think that's what kept bothering us. And that's what we were obsessed to solve. I mean, it's a very hard problem statement. There's a reason the status quo exists, right? I mean, there's a reason all of this is expensive because a lot of hard work goes into this. The services themselves are very expensive. But yes, definitely.
It's high touch, basically.
Yes, yes. But definitely there needs to be an innovation here because everything has to be solved at some point. And we thought that this is the right moment for us to solve this for everyday investors. And fortunately enough, we raised our seed funding, pre-seed in next set of, I think, couple of months after that. And then we got
had you launched an MVP when you got the seed, or the seed was like pre-product?
Yeah, we did launch an MVP, but it was like we tested out with only a couple of hundred people. That's it, and that was mostly our close network. And
this was like a investment advisor where you could like maybe give it some information and then it would give you back a recommendation. And then you could, like, through UPI or payment gateway, you could put the money and then it would invest on your behalf. And then you would have a dashboard to track, like something like that. Like,
is
that
exactly? Yeah, exactly. So a lot of advanced things were still not there. Like tracking was, for example, still underway, and a couple of other things were still, you know, work in progress. But yeah, we had started at least testing out, because I think that's one thing that we've been very careful about. I mean, things should not be in your head all the time. Whether whether you're building a product or whether whatever problem you're solving, I think you need to have a much comprehensive perspective. You need to talk to a lot of people because that's ultimately the user. I mean, I myself am the user. I mean, the best thing, best advantage I feel for me at Stack is that I am the end user. I am not an HNI. I am not, a person who is, let's say, 50 plus, who this product might not be exactly suitable for. I am the exact TG. So that's why it's very easy for me to understand that, I would like to use this. I would not like to use this. But still, we were very, we were obsessed with our users. We wanted to just see that what are the use cases that we're missing out on? What is that we're thinking wrongly? And yeah, so by the time we had our seed fund, we did build some MVP, but a lot of things I would say were still underway. We needed to improve on a lot of things. We were getting a lot of feedback, in fact. And I think even after our first capital, we started iterating a lot on a very frequent basis. Like,
how much did you raise that seed round? Was it like a friends and family or?
No. It was proper investors only. There were a couple of angel investors and also a VC. We raised about $500,000 at that point. That was enough for us to drive us for some more time. And after that, fortunately, we got into Y Combinator. So I think that's when things started accelerating for us, because not because we had the capital or not because just we had the tag. I think it was mostly, I would just credit it all to the Y Combinator partners, because they really helped us, get better perspective, get better, network through which we could figure out that, what's going to work, what's not going to work. We talked to a lot of people, not just in the US, not just in India, but all around the world who were building similar solutions. We just exchanged thoughts, exchanged our learnings. And that's when we started realizing, okay, these are the different investment behaviors. These are the challenges that we might face. And that really helps you to sort of, build that vision that, what is basically that you see your company going at. And basically, what kind of user behavior should you expect in the longer run? What kind of challenges might face? So that really helped us get a lot of perspective. And of course, I mean,
if you like to hear stories of founders, then we have tons of great stories from entrepreneurs who have built billion-dollar businesses. Just search for the Founder Thesis podcast on any audio streaming app like Spotify, Gaana, Apple Podcasts, and subscribe to the show.
Yeah. Give me some details, like, what could be like your top takeaways from the YC program in terms of, like, you did so and so on your product, or you did so and so for customer acquisition, or what kind of takeaways did you have?
Yes. So I think for everybody also, anybody who's listening here who would be an aspiring entrepreneur or somebody who's who might be considering applying to Y Combinator, I think these things might come handy. For us, I think there were 3-4 things that Y Combinator really helped with. One was honest and critical feedback. I mean, you rarely get anybody, especially in India, I think I have seen that it's a tendency that people don't give you an honest or a critical feedback in your face. Y Combinator is just opposite. I mean, the partners would really roast you if they feel that, you're going in the wrong direction, if they feel that you're not thinking properly, or you're just, you're deliberately trying to avoid something. I think they're very honest about all of that, and that really hits you hard and gets you going. So one is that. Second is, there's a pressure in Y Combinator. They really put you under the pressure of launching things very fast or setting milestones, following those deadlines. So basically, when your milestones, your targets are out there in the public, you have an added pressure. It's not just something that's internal within the team. You cannot delay it any longer. So I think that helped us sort of press the paddle of execution of things. Third was networking, definitely. I mean, I got to interact with such great founders of companies who are at a $1 billion business right now in the US, in Europe, and various other countries. And that's when I realized that, okay, these are the challenges that they face. They told us, you know, these are the regrets that we have, and probably this is something you should work upon. And I mean, that was really helpful. I mean, now we know what should we avoid and what are newer mistakes we can make, basically, and not repeat the same ones. So yeah, I think those were 3-4 things. And of course, then there's the capital, and you know, it's like a smoother journey after Y Combinator, at least for you.
So how did the product evolve during that YC incubation period? Like, so pre YC you had like a basic MVP where people could get advice and then put in money and invest. Then post YC, what did the product look like?
So post YC, it was a full-fledged product. We had launched it under a closed beta, so basically about, we had got about 5,000 or 10,000 odd users, between 5,000 to 10,000 users we had. And I think we started getting a lot of good feedback as well. I mean, for the first time, we saw so many users using the product, and, you know, so much feedback at scale we were getting, and a lot of it was actually good. And I think that's when we started thinking about better features and more advanced features. So, for example, we started out with certain asset class. Now we wanted to diversify. And the moment you think about something new in fintech, again, there are a couple of more licenses, couple of more regulations that you need to take care of. So we started preparing ourselves for whatever was coming.
Which asset class did you start with, and what did you want to?
Yeah, we started with mutual funds, and basically now we had started surprisingly getting a lot of demand for cryptocurrency, for example. There were people who wanted, more debt options as well. People wanted, in fact, some of them also wanted gold. Some of them wanted stocks also. So the demand just never ends, you know. People, that's what I'm saying, that now investing has become so mainstream. People are seeking out more options. They want better opportunities for themselves. They're just more aware. So now we started preparing for that as well. I mean, with fintech, it's not like you just have to build a website and an app and, you know, now everything is available. It's not like that. You have to figure out whatever goes behind the doors also, regulations and everything else. So we started preparing for that. Initially there would be certain glitches, etc., that you would have to take care of. Because we were so obsessed with user journey and making that entire experience really good, we made it a point that we didn't want to hire any customer service in the initial couple of months, in fact, 3 months. All of us in the team, we made each and every, in fact, we still do. I still make at least, I think, 7 to 8 user calls every day. And all of us did. I mean, all of us in the team, about 7-8 people, all of us were taking care of all customer service, every, issue resolution, etc. So that really got us very close to our users, and that made us understand that how do they interact with app? What do they think while using it? What are the problems that they're facing? What are their expectations which are getting fulfilled or not fulfilled? So yeah, I think that started happening. It's still going on, in fact. We raised our final seed funding as well a couple of months later. And yeah, it's going great.
When did you raise the last round?
So we raised it in the month of last year, in the month of, I think, September.
Okay. This was the 4.5 million.
Correct. Round. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, we started expanding the team. We needed more tech support. We needed more developers. We needed more financial advisors. Now, the other problem that we wanted to solve was, now that we have built a foundational product, now we wanted to humanize things a bit. So we wanted the problem with fintech products is that, and each and every founder of a fintech product would agree, that you have people who would have trust issues. I mean, the first problem statement that you need to solve with fintech and financial services is the trust threshold that you need to cross. And we realized that for that to happen, we need to humanize the services, one. And second is, anyway, wealth management is something that needs more, you know, human touch. That's something that can only be brought out by a human intervention. And that does not mean that you need thousands of people making calls to people and, you know, bothering them, or you wasting, or, you know, having having to basically having people to spend more than, let's say, 5-10 minutes with you. We wanted to basically draw that fine line where we're also digitizing everything, but at the same time, making it humanized enough so that people trust it, people want to interact with it, and they want to come back to use your product and basically use your services. So that's when we started figuring out what can be done. And so we started first making all the offline efforts. We started organizing a lot of these webinars, these sessions around investing. What are the possible opportunities? How should beginners invest? How should people who want to retire early, let's say, want to freelance, want to become entrepreneurs later on, how should they take care of the finances and stuff? And for that, we got a lot of good response. I mean, all of the entire growth and traction that we saw during the first 5-6 months that we've been witnessing so far has all been organic. We did not spend a single penny into marketing or anywhere else. And we wanted it to be that way for the longest because that way you basically get a very high quality user base, people who are your ambassadors essentially. At the end of, 2 month period, 1 month period, when they're done exploring the app, they would be talking about you and your app to 10 other people. And that sort of builds that cycle. And so now we wanted to, go that extra mile and make those efforts so that we can humanize the services, humanize this app a little bit more. It should not feel like you're interacting with, a robot. So, yeah, we started out with these webinars and we got really good response. People started asking for more such sessions. So we started organizing them on scale on various social media platforms also. And yeah, so that's when we realized that, what if we can actually incorporate all of this into the app itself? So whenever people are they're on a journey, let's say from point A to point C, it should feel like they're talking to someone. It should feel like somebody's guiding them through basically how the portfolio is being made, what is the information that we need from you, why do we need that from you, etc. So yeah, that is what we wanted to solve. So,
like chatbot kind of an interface instead of a form for it, like
not exactly a chatbot. I mean,
like how did you humanize the product,
Yeah, so it's yet not completely done, but I mean the solution basically that we thought was what if there would be a human talking to people. So we did not want chatbot or anything, because I mean, in the end, it feels like you're just typing and somebody else is just there's an automated reply coming. So what we did was we started feeding videos everywhere. So that's still being tested. I mean, we've not rolled it out for everyone yet, but at every step we wanted, it should look like, whenever you're signing up, there should be somebody interacting with you. Hey, welcome to my app. This is what we're going to do for you. And this is why you should be using it. Whenever we're building a portfolio, we wanted it to not look like a black box. I mean, it's not a magic that we're doing for you, right? I mean, just because you're giving me a certain set of information doesn't mean that I'm doing some magic behind the doors and, building a magic portfolio for you. There's a science behind it and there's a logic behind it and people should know it. Otherwise, how would they ever understand investing? I mean, we don't want them to be dependent on us. We want us to be a team. The users and Stack should be a team together, your investing brains. So yeah, that's what we started working on. Again, it's very difficult because it has to be personalized. I mean, you cannot be sending same generic message, same generic logic to each and every person. So that's what we're trying to figure out right now. A lot of it is already rolled out to certain set of users. But yeah, a lot of it is still under progress.
This sounds like a fascinating problem to solve. How do you do personalized videos? Do you have like a text to speech and then like that speech?
No. All the videos are made. No. We make all the videos.
And you are the star, like so to say.
Yeah, me. And like then who? There are a couple of more financial advisors that we have who are basically in charge of or the investing brains at Stack. We are the people and we sort of make sure that there are relevant people interacting at relevant points. So whenever there's, we have to educate user about a particular portfolio's logic and basically asset class or something, there would be a financial expert talking to them. So, of course, during the onboarding, it's me because, it should not look like the founder is always, you know, under a mask and, you know, never visible to you. You know, it's easier to trust a product when you know who's behind it and that person is not shying away from interacting from the users. So that's how we decided. How we automate is actually quite difficult. We are still figuring out a lot of things. I mean, few places it's very generic. We have built a certain set of videos that go depending on the user activity. Also depending on the user profile. So from whatever details we're getting, we push videos accordingly. There's a dashboard that's controlling all of it. To an extent, right now it's manual. We're trying over the time we can, you know, make it 100% automated. For portfolios, it's a little bit more complicated. We're trying to figure out how we can, you know, bridge that gap where it is also easier for us to mass produce such videos, but at the same time, they're also relevant for the end user.
So right now what you're doing is you're creating videos for use cases, like if somebody is choosing, let's say, a tax saving product, then there would be a video for tax saving product which would tell them the logic behind what you're recommending and so on and so forth. Okay,
correct.
Okay, got it. So what is the user journey like? Just talk to me as if I don't know Stack and I just downloaded the app. Is it an app or is it web?
It's an app. Yeah, it's an app. We just wanted everything to be on your fingertips, so it's easier when it's an app. So basically, yeah, as a user, all you have to do is just whatever device you use, depending on it, you can either go to the Play Store or App Store. We are available at both the platforms. You can download the app. After downloading, you proceed towards basically sign up. So there would be a few onboarding screens which will guide you through what are the use cases of app, how it will help you. Sign up process is fairly easy. You just have to put in your mobile number and you've signed up. After that, you can set up a login pin for easy access every time you're exiting and re-entering the app. And after that, basically, you directly come to the home screen. It's very goal driven. So basically, we wanted your investment strategies to be dependent on your lifestyle and also what your aspirations, what your goals, your dreams are. It's very difficult also for me right now, as you, I think I recall you mentioned that how is Paytm Money and all not solving those problems. So now another problem that I forgot to mention was that for me right now, if I use these, you know, marketplace websites and platforms, I'm not able to align these investments that I've made. So for example, if I invested, let's say X amount, let's say for 5 lakhs into mid cap. Now, what is that 5 lakh? Basically, what are my expectations from that 5 lakh over, let's say, 3-4 years? And where would that money be going? Why am I investing into mid cap? What is my goal with that particular investment portfolio? So that was another problem that we wanted to solve. So that's why right after you come to the home screen, you're asked to create your goals. So for example, for me right now, my goal would be like, let's say, buying a new car 2 years down the line, a new house, let's say, 4 years down the line, or just a new mobile phone 6 months down the line. So I can just create these goals. I would be asked to basically set targets. So for example, let's say for a mobile phone, it's 1 lakh. For a house, let's say it's 3 CR or something. And then I put the target date to it. So for a mobile, let's say it's 1 year down the line. And basically after that, we will tell you that this is your portfolio. This is what we have made portfolio for you. And after that, you can see how likely are you to achieve. There's a graph that will show you the projection. How likely are you to achieve this? What is the amount that you would be getting at the end of whatever target date you've set? And that's it. You can just proceed. You can make the payment. Now, we've made it more gamified and fun, actually, because a lot of our users were from the age group of, I would say, 23, 24. Yeah, young Gen Z and millennials and Gen Z. So we wanted to be more gamified, and so we've actually incorporated some fun rules and challenges where it makes sure that you're investing in a disciplined manner, but it's not as boring as, you know, your bank prompting you every time, or, you know, you're just creating some boring SIPs. So what you've done is that one is Boost. Boost is basically which accelerates your investment. So every time you're getting some extra cash, bonus, whatever, you can boost your particular goal, or we call it stack basically. So you can boost your stack. Then there are auto investment options, like there's a payday challenge. So every time you're getting your salary, there would be certain money set aside from your salary towards whatever goal you've assigned for it. There's set and forget, which works like SIP only, where you select the date and amount and it would be auto deducted. There's a 52 week challenge, basically, where every week you would be saving increment on an incremental basis, whatever multiples you assign, so that your savings are increasing over the time. So that's how we've made it gamified. So you can attach any rule you want to your particular goal or stack, and that's it, you're invested. You can use net banking, you can use UPI, you can set mandates. So there's one touch payment also available. There are multiple options through which you can make payments.
Okay, I have two different questions here, but let me ask this in terms of how the auto debit works. Do you need to use a credit card for that, or how does that work, from a back-end technology perspective?
Okay, right now because these RBI guidelines were changing about these cards and saving the cards and all, so we wanted to sort of avoid all of that right now. So right now the option available is setting a mandate. So basically you can set up an e-mandate from your bank, which basically means you're giving this particular app or website permission via your bank that on this and that date, this much amount is supposed to be auto debited. So,
but for that, do I have to separately go to my bank's app, or can I do it within Stack?
No. So thanks to India Stack, basically what you have to do is there's another pop-up that comes. Yeah, now that takes you away from the app, but it's within the app itself. I mean, that's...
okay, got it.
That's
got
a web app.
Like a payment gateway.
Yeah, that's experience. A web app that opens, yeah. So you just have to feed in some details, basically, or some certain bank details it might require, and OTP, and that's it. I think it's probably a 2-minute process, 1-minute or 2-minute process.
Okay. The other question I want to ask is these challenges and 52-week streak and all. So is there a social element to this, or is it
That's a very good question.
Like you said about YC, that the fact that you put your milestones out there put pressure on you.
Yeah.
Are you doing that here?
Yeah, it's actually a very good question. So yeah, we did realize that people would feel more compelled to achieve their goals and be more disciplined towards it if it's more social, if it's much more out there. And plus we wanted app to not look like a banking app, not look like an investment app either. We wanted it to be more of a social media app, something that you just want to go to, something that you would like using. So what we've done is basically you can share whenever you're accomplishing your goal, you can share it. Right now it's on social media platforms, but we're working on making it social within the app itself. But I think it only makes sense when you've got much more users to interact with. Right now, it's just been a few months, so I don't think you would have so many friends and family that you would want to share this news with. So it's right now only on social media platforms. So basically every time you're achieving your goal, every time you have crossed a certain milestone, 50%, 70% of your goal, you can share the good news with your friends and family. Also, whenever users make certain good decisions, which is right now investing, we basically reward them via Stack Coins also. So every time you're, let's say, making your first investment, you've set up your first goal, to give you a head start, we will basically give Stack Coins, which you can reinvest into any of your goals, or in fact, redeem as cash also.
So one coin is 1 rupee, is that how it works?
No. So right now it's, I think it's 50 coins is 5 rupees. So that's how it works. It's multiple of 10. so 10 coins is 1 rupee, and, we're basically also, coming up with some exciting rewards. So basically we realized that a lot of people want stocks as rewards. So we are, so basically we would be now rewarding stocks as well. So let's say if you make XYZ investment, you can pick whatever stock you want, and we are introducing US stocks. So because a lot of people wanted to sort of, play around with US stocks.
Own an Apple or...
Exactly, yeah. So if you like Facebook, if you like Apple or, whatever, Tesla, you can just pick that stock and that would be added to your rewards. So that's how, in fact, also crypto. So there would be both the options, US stocks as well as crypto. So whatever you prefer, you can select as your reward.
I want to dig into that last answer you gave on rewards. So like you said, you reward with crypto, with foreign stocks. So are these asset classes that you're offering, did you fix those issues around the plumbing, the plumbing to invest in crypto or the plumbing to invest in foreign stocks?
Yes, yes, yes. So these are asset classes that we're offering. So people can eventually then, if they want to hold on to these stocks or these asset classes, they can. Otherwise, they can also redeem them to again cash or whatever they want.
So investing in foreign stocks is also something which I can have as part of my portfolio. Like if I'm, do I choose my portfolio myself or do you ask me for goals and then you recommend that portfolio to me? Like.
Yeah, no. So we do all the heavy lifting. We just wanted to avoid it for the user. So right now, we want to make it more customizable eventually because we realize that a lot of people would want to modify the recommendations as well. So we're working on it. But right now, it's pre-built portfolios that we would suggest based on the profile of the users, their goals, targets, time horizon, everything.
So like your portfolio will include crypto also, like for a certain goal?
Right now, we have not started with, we're only constraining ourselves to domestic, all the domestic asset classes, not going to global or even crypto as of now. We wanted to sort of wait out until everything is much clearer. Now that we've started seeing some positive signs, we might start incorporating that. But right now, the portfolio itself is all domestic stocks and funds. But yeah, who knows, we might start, introducing other asset classes also very soon.
Because recommending crypto is risky, no? Because of the fluctuations and, you know, then you're on the hook because you recommended it. So like you'll bear the brunt.
Exactly, exactly. So that's why everything has to be, on the consent of the users. Only people who can, who have that kind of risk tolerance and appetite to handle that volatility, who are willing to, expose themselves to such a risky asset class, and also what proportions are actually appropriate is what we'd have to take care of. So, we also don't want to devoid users of this particular, asset class because people who want it, who've been investing, and India has a lot of, crypto investors also. So we cannot really ignore that fact as well. But definitely, we would have to be more careful because ultimately we're the ones advising, we're the ones recommending that portfolio. So those are some things that we would really have to be very careful about. But everything has to be by the consent of the users and also with full transparency.
So your recommendations include direct equities also? Because that again becomes risky for you to recommend any one equity because of risk of fluctuation. Or do you recommend like mutual funds and such options? Like what is there in the basket?
Yeah, so in the basket, there's everything actually. It's not just mutual funds. Otherwise, it might not give you as much returns as you want. It really depends on what your goal target is and what's the time horizon you're looking at. But depending on basically, so for example, if it's a much nearer goal if I want to invest in for just 1 year period or a 2 year period, we would not be investing into, any long-term funds. We would be investing into most liquid and debt funds so that you have that kind of liquidity available at all times. The money is very safe. There's not much risk involved because you might need it just the other day. On the other hand, if you're investing for a longer term period, then we can include a little more riskier options. We can diversify into direct equities also. So that's also something that's taken into consideration. Risk appetite is something that we would have to look at very carefully. So depending on all of these factors, the portfolio is curated. But if it's a long-term portfolio, it might include a lot of asset classes.
Yeah, including direct equity.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But would you do the rebalancing also? Because equity can't really be like invest and forget,
correct.
No?
Correct. So, yeah. So we rebalance, So we basically call it smart stack approach. This entire algorithm that the portfolios are running on and even the adjustments that happen are all based on we call it SSA smart stack algorithm, basically approach, where the entire logic is actually built on a Nobel Prize winning algorithm, which is being used actually by a number of robo advisors and wealth managers across the world. And it's a proven and tested method. So this has something. So basically the entire IP behind portfolio management and building is this. And the rebalancing that happens is on a quarterly basis, mostly right now. where we basically again revisit all the portfolios and we check their constituents. We basically recheck what are their proportions into the portfolios allocated, what is the performance over last couple of months, and accordingly we readjust as well. So we notify the users that there's a readjustment required, and if they agree, once they verify, there would be rebalancing made.
Okay, so for a user, it's just like a single click consent, and then you take care of the selling and the buying and all that. Okay, so the user here is essentially someone who's looking for saving money without getting into how the money gets saved. Like if I was to actually be someone who wanted to personally invest more in, let's say, one sector, like what small case does, you know, where you can choose sectoral bets. So that is not really like your demographic, target demographic.
I would say it's okay. So basically, to define the target audience, there could be many factors. We could go for demographic per se, even age groups and what cities, what professions they're into, and also some behavioral aspects to it. But you're talking just about their behavioral, relations. I think it's mostly two kinds of people. One is people who just want everything to run on autopilot. They don't want to get into the nitties and gritties of, you know, where their investments are made, what's the research that's going into it. They in fact also don't care about returns as much. They just want to see that it's a sustainable portfolio. It's something that's going to give them returns in the longer run. Typical value investors maybe. And then there are a second set of people who are more involved, people who basically want to track everything. They need something which is easier to track. So in the app itself, it's very easy to track which goal is performing better, which goal is, you know, following its basically target date, etc. People who want to see how you build the portfolio, they want to interact with you. People who basically know what asset classes they want to diversify into, and they have much more knowledge. So I think they know that, you know, they have to save this much for tax, so they should go for maybe a tax saving portfolio. So there are both kinds of audiences actually that we're catering to, and we're making sure that everything, I mean, all the features are actually catering to both their use cases. If they want everything automated, they don't want to be bothered about, you know, the fluctuations, they don't want to be bothered about very frequent notifications, we take care of that. Then there's other set of audience who want more defined portfolios. They want better asset classes. They want more diversification. So we're also trying to introduce them in a way that it does not hamper the experience for other set of users as well. So I think from all the interactions that we've had, I mean, we're literally talking to so many users on a daily basis. And it seems like they're both kinds of users that we're getting, and both are quite happy with the product.
So the ones who want more customization, like how does it happen for them then? Like, do they, like, yeah, once so you recommend something, like, yeah.
Yeah. So as I said earlier, I mean, we're working on customization. It's right now not available. But what we're trying to do is just make it more comprehensive in terms of diversification into different asset classes, introducing more satellite portfolios so that they're, you know, industry specific also if they need. Basically trying as much as possible to just reduce the manual customization at their end and provide as much personalization as we can from our end. But yeah, there are a couple of things that we are yet to sort of resolve, like, of course, customization at the user's end that we'll have to probably introduce sometime down the line.
Got it. So what kind of growth have you seen in numbers? Like, what is the so you started that closed beta with 5-10,000, and you know, so what is today the number of investors on the platform, and what is your like assets under management?
Yeah, so I think we had initially started out with a 5-10,000 user base, and after that, when we rolled out to we rolled it out in the public, I think it's been about 3 or 4 months since then. We've got about, and we've not even started marketing as such. It's all organic, word of mouth. And I think most of the traction is actually right now through word of mouth. So we've crossed, I think, about 50,000-60,000, I think, user base recently. More importantly, the goals that people are setting are just amazing. I mean, just to look at the kind of goals and, you know, aspirations people have, it just you know, sort of pumps us up that, you know, these are the goals that people want to fulfill, and you know, these are the investments that we should make happen for people. So we have crossed about, I think, 100 CR plus worth of goals made so far on the platform. So that's also another milestone that we hit about, I think, last month itself. And it's going great. I think we just want to make sure, I mean, scaling is not so difficult. You know, it's not difficult to get, after you've reached a product market fit, it's not difficult to get so many users, millions of users using your product. But to maintain it, maintain the quality, and to make sure that, you know, you're providing value to each and every person, it's very important. So we're trying to just make sure that the balance is, that we strike the right balance between both. We're not pressing the paddle so much that we lose on the quality, we lose on the, you know, customer service that we want to provide. And at the same time, we also want to have some sustainable growth over the time, so that we can interact with as many users, we can get more feedback, we can, you know, scale across different sets of audiences to understand what the requirements could be.
Okay. So I want to understand you versus the other competitors. So we've talked extensively about you versus like a Paytm Money, because that is purely execution. You are strategy and execution both. But there are also players who are like similar approach of wealth management for the masses, like say Deserve. So you know, what is the difference here, or like what is there a different TG that each of you are targeting, or you know, tell me about that.
So I think I'm not sure about the target audience. I mean, they can they would know that better. I'm not sure about their target audience. Ours is very clear. I mean, we're right now targeting mostly these, you know, younger millennials mostly, and this Gen Z people who are, in fact, right now the investors that we're getting, the users that we're getting are mostly first-time investors. In fact, a lot of them are first-time investors. And a considerable amount are actually coming from tier 2 and 3 cities of India. So that was a surprising fact for us. And we really are proud that, you know, we're able to support so many dreams and so many people who might not have earlier had access to better platforms or better wealth advisory. About the product itself, I think the differences are fairly simple. Deserve maybe, and even other wealth management products that there are. A lot of them that I've seen are, first of all, I think we don't have a lot of robo-advisors already in India. I think right, it's only now that we've started seeing a boom in this industry. And from what I recall, I think I've personally used around 2-3 so far. A couple of them, I would say, are serving a little older audience. They are trying to basically target people who are saving for, like, who want to basically save with their family, who want to save for the children's education, etc. We, on the other hand, get a much more younger audience, and people who are more risks, you know, taking, people who are more, a little more financially savvy and tech savvy, in fact. Another difference is that a couple of other products that I've used, their portfolios are like, they did not surpass my expectations at all. The personalization is almost zero, negligible. They're just like copy-pasting same portfolio to each and every user. They're not goal-driven, more importantly. I think no robo-advisor right now is goal-driven, and that's a major pain point that I see users facing. None of the robo-advisors will actually design a portfolio, strategize your investments, and plan it based on what goals do you have in life. And I think the basics of investment itself, they start from planning your financial life, right? So it's said that even before you start investing, you have to plan for emergencies, you have to plan for your how to repay the debt if you have any, and then only you can start investment portfolios. But I think the basics themselves, I think, are not clear with the users first. They just, I think once they start earning, they start saving, they just want to dive into, you know, stocks and trading, etc. So I think Stack wants to basically set the basics very right. We want to, we help people actually save for the emergency funds. We recommend that whenever you've started investing, is your emergency fund already sorted? Otherwise, start saving for emergency fund. Only then you can start investing for other goals. Similarly, for tax also, we basically take into account what your income is, what you already have invested in, so that we can calculate what sort of tax saving instruments can you invest in. And only then we recommend the portfolio. So I think stack is more goal-driven, more personalized. And yeah, I think I can say that the target audience also is a little more younger compared to other platforms. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think...
Your product also appeals to a younger audience because of the UX of more gamified.
I think after using so many products over the years, one thing I realized was, I mean, I recall the journeys by heart. I know what problems does each and every product has. Mm-hmm. So we were really obsessed with the user experience. We wanted to design it in a way that it's like a smooth sailing ride for people. It looks extremely pleasing to your eyes. You know, you when you open it, it should not look like it's another banking app that you're opening, or it's something really boring, or it has to do something with your money only. You just don't want to see it again and again. So yeah, I think that's what we had in mind, and we're very, very obsessed about making it, look very pleasing. It should be, the experience itself should be very refreshing to the users.
So in the long term, do you want to be like a full stack financial advisor? So if someone wants to buy insurance, like say even a term insurance, which is not an investment, but they can buy it from there. Or if someone wants a loan, then they can get a loan from there. Or if someone wants to do equity trading, then like is that an aspiration for you? Or is it more to be the... like the robo advisor of India, like what is
most likely we want to be that financial hub for a user where they can trust us with their money, whether it's your investments, whether it's your payments, your insurances, and more importantly, when all of these things are, interlinked, what kind of insurance you're taking, what kind of savings you have in your bank account, what kind of investments you're making, all of this is just, interlinked. So I think that it should be one place that handles all of this. It should be, all of your data should actually be fed to this one particular hub where these services can actually be more customized and more efficient if they know more about each other. So we definitely want to, provide all sorts of financial services to the users over the period of time. But definitely, that all of that depends on what kind of response we're getting from the people, what kind of opportunities we have, what is basically feasible for us. Saying all of this, becoming a super app, et cetera, is very easy. But and for users also, for them to, when we tell them that, what if this one app could do everything for you? I mean, for them also, it's a very fascinating concept. They'd really love to listen to all of this. But the point is that it becomes very difficult to handle, to basically make one app handle all of this. And I'm not just talking about the tech, in fact, the experience itself can get very complicated. I mean, I've used a lot of super apps. It gets very complicated, gets very messy. You're not able to figure out even one use case out of that. So I think we would have to take baby step towards it, and we would have to see how people are reacting. Everything actually just depends on the end users. If they like it, whether they're able to use it, whether they find it simple enough, or should we even diversify into different apps? So that all would, I think, something that future holds for us.
So, my guess is that eventually there will be a consolidation where, say, neobanks would want to acquire such wealth advising apps, because it's like the digital version of it.
Yeah.
Like say Goldwise was acquired by Neo, and Goldwise had that similar concept of helping you invest based on your goals, but I think the product was not as polished, or maybe algorithmically not so much customization. But so what do you think will be Stack's future in that kind of a scenario? Do you see yourself as being an acquirer, getting acquired? What are your thoughts on that? Are you open to acquisition offers somewhere down the line, or like just from a personal, as a founder, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, we would do everything that's right for the business and for the customers. But personally, yes, I feel that we I see us acquiring a couple of businesses, honestly, because there are, I mean, we have to do a lot of planning way ahead when it's financial services and it's fintech. So from whatever goals that we have in the future, it seems like we would have to acquire, in fact, a couple of businesses, some services, so as to accelerate the process for ourselves. Getting acquired, I think, it would be quite difficult because, of course, I mean, if we're able to pull all of this off in a very short period of time, it would be an expensive business eventually for somebody to acquire if we're able to surpass those particular milestones. So I'm not sure whether how feasible acquisition would be in the long run. But one thing I'm sure about is that for us to be able to build certain parts of our businesses, we would have to maybe acquire companies in the future.
What and kind yes, of right.
I mean, okay, so maybe we would need... okay, so that's on the record.
Just hypothetical. I know it's very, very hypothetical, like pure Cali for now, but purely as a intellectual exercise.
No, it's not Cali. We have started exploring that. But yeah, that's supposed to be off the record. So basically, we want to launch trading services also. Now that we're talking, basically, we want to launch 2-3 other apps. One is particularly only for investments. One would be for traders, specifically people who just want to do all of that themselves. They don't want to trust anybody with their money. They're very active into the market. So we would be probably launching Stack Trade for them. This would be Stack Invest. And there could be another one as well in the future if you want to delve into, let's say, banking or something else also.
So what about crypto? Like, would you look to
crypto have a come into separate... trading okay. itself?
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So we want to keep it separate. That's why I was saying that, you know, we would probably serve two different users there. We might include crypto as a managed portfolio separately to invest also. So people who don't want to do their research but yet want to invest into crypto, we'll probably launch a crypto managed portfolio, which is probably just investing into Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, and that's it. So that's about it. And for people who want to freely trade into crypto, we might include that in Stack Trade as well. And yes, I think about acquiring, because we want to delve into trading and it needs broker license. We're talking to a couple of companies who already have broker license, and we might acquire mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. later on. Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay. So why did you choose the name Stack?
Okay. So... I think I'm personally very good with names. I think we've so far incorporated about 2-3 companies because we were into YC, so we had to headquarter the company there. We had to build a subsidiary here. And for other things that we want to do, we might have to, you know, also build a couple of other subsidiaries as well. So it's always my job to sort of come up with a name. And I don't know, I'm somehow good at it. But with Stack, it was very difficult. I mean, because that was just one brand name that we had to select. And I just wanted it to be, you know, on the tip of the tongue for the users, but at the same time should make some sense. So I don't know, randomly, I was inclined at keeping something that starts from S or A, because those are most common names. And then I realized that, you know, what I mean, eventually the dream was to just build something that sort of brings everything together for the users in a neat manner. So I don't know how, but this name came to my mind that what if we call it Stack, you know, something that stacks all your wealth together and stuff. So that's when the name came up in my mind, and, you know, it sort of sounded very good for others as well. We took feedback from a lot of people, basically friends, and everybody liked it. So, yeah, that's where the name came from.
Okay, got it. So what are like your long-term milestones that you are personally chasing? Like maybe it could be like the AUM you want to hit or whatever. Like,
yeah. So, I mean, the long-term goals are not so long-term. I mean, in the 6 months period itself, we want to expand this user base to probably 1 million users. And that 1 million I'm saying are people who are just investing through the product, through the app. And out of this, I personally want to target at least 60% coming from tier 2 cities or at least being first investors. I mean, we really want to, you know, drive on this retail investor wave that's coming in, and more importantly, tap into this audience early on, because these are people who need most help with, and these are people who make wrong decisions early in their lives. So that's that. And of course, in terms of, I think, AUM itself, we want to target getting this, you know, the goals that people are making. We want to basically target 100 million USD worth of goals being planned and made on the platform itself. So that's what we want to manage eventually, at least in the 6 months period, 6 to 7 months period.
It may be too early to ask you this, but what percentage of people actually meet their goals, like, or what percentage of that, like, say 100 crore you're saying is the amount of goals set, what will it actually lead to 80 crores of actual AUM eventually, or, like, you know, what is that ratio like?
Okay, so it's too early. I mean, it's been only 3 months, so hardly there would be anybody setting 3 month goal that I can say that 100% people have accomplished it. But I'll tell you what the success rate of the transactions are, like recurring transactions that that are happening on the app. So till now, from all the users that we've gotten, I think barely, I think 18 people have cancelled their transactions or, you know, not pay the transactions, recurring transactions. So you can almost say that, you know, more than 95% people are making successful transactions. Not even making, I mean, it's getting done. They are successfully contributing towards their goals month on month or whatever they've decided week on week basis. So it's, we're really happy to see that that people are sticking to their goals and, you know, the disciplined investing actually happening on the app. We also are talking to people and, you know, we're figuring out how we can make it more easier for people who are, you know, who just maybe canceled their payments, etc. And most of them actually in their cases were people who did not have enough money at that point. So I personally talk to each and every person, especially people who are who at some point became inactive or were not able to deposit money. So, I mean, most of the cases that I interacted with these users, they just said that, you know, at this point I don't have enough money, or I'm basically in between switching jobs and all. So I just want to hold on to my goals for a while. So that makes sense. And we're figuring out how we can sort of also resolve maybe these issues as well.
Okay. Got it. So, you know, is this a business which would be driven by macroeconomic factors? You know, like if the stock market is increasing, then more people will want to invest and will search for an investing platform and come to Stack. Whereas if the stock market starts going down, then the number of users getting added would also slow down, like.
So yeah, that's an interesting question. Now I think that on a certain extent actually drives many almost all investment apps, and in fact even banking apps right now in India. I mean, look at the pandemic. When pandemic hit, you'll see that there was, I think, 70%, we saw 70% growth in the demat accounts being opened in India during the pandemic itself. Now that was because there was so much buzz about, you know, that the market is at its low right now, we should buy, we should start investing, etc. There was so much more awareness that there was an exponential increase in the demat accounts. Now that's another fact that a lot of them are still not active. But I feel that every time there's, you know, the market goes down and there's a dip, there's ultimately, I think people have started becoming more aware. There's just so much awareness. There's news flooded everywhere on news channels, on Twitter, on social media, that there is an impact on each and every business, especially on investment apps. There would definitely be an impact, but I would say that not so actively. We're not a trading platform eventually. It's more of a long-term investment platform for people where they can plan for their lives. And it's not, we ourselves wouldn't be rebalancing everything on a daily basis or even on a weekly basis. So I don't think there would be much impact on a certain shorter period of time, but we definitely get hikes when there are market lows. That's definite. That's a definite fact. I mean, we've seen much more traffic coming in whenever there are market lows, and, you know, for some reason people start investing much more at that point, at that period, during that period of time.
You know, Gen Z is, I think, extremely driven by influencers. So do you have like an influencer strategy, a way to tap social influencers to onboard Gen Z users?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, While I think that this is sometimes people do get overboard with this whole following influencers and getting advice from them thing, but there are a few influencers who are doing a really good job when it comes to financial awareness, when it comes to creating educating users about investments, personal finance in general. A lot of them we've already worked with, a couple of influencers we've already done a few campaigns with.
As in, you would do a sponsored post by that influencer?
We've done educational videos with them. So we try to do some, sessions, webinars with them. We also have done a few videos with them, in fact. We do make sure that it should not be something superficial. I mean, it should not just be about download stack and all. It should be something educational, something that provides value to the users. And then maybe it's their choice whether they want to use stack or not. So it is always value driven for sure. With influencers, I think, we want to identify people who really align with our vision. There are all kinds of influencers, people who are just into cryptocurrencies, who are just into trading. There could be people who are just about financial planning and personal finance in general. So I think one thing that's very important is that whoever we're collaborating with should align with our vision, should ultimately agree with our principles of portfolio making, of how we basically approach investing for our users. And that way, whoever the face is for our brand for whatever period of time should resonate with the product itself. And hence, the end customer's expectations should match ultimately with whatever product they're using, with the app they're using. Particularly for me, I think personally, I feel that we with influencers want to have a more of an educational long-term relationship where basically I personally want to create these, maybe some short video courses, quick video courses, maybe where these, influencers are maybe educating users about what mutual funds are, what equities are, how to select mutual funds, etc. So I think these are the kind of stuff we want to do and not just a superficial, maybe app download campaign or something. I mean, that does not really make sense for us as a brand and even for the users.
Like an influencer-driven course within the Stack app. So people want to learn, learning center for them. Mm.
Exactly. So I think one thing influencers are really good at is communication, the way they basically, grasp attention of people, the way they educate people. I think that's their strength. So we want to use it and club it with more, educational stuff so that we can help creating more financial awareness.
What about something that could probably more directly monetize their following by, say, a co-branded investment plan? Like an influencer branded invest, Nike's Jordan shoes. So
this is also off the record. So in the trade that we will launch, Stack Trade, basically, it would be more of a social platform where people can actually create their own small cases. Imagine people create their own small cases and they're actually posting it publicly. People can follow each other. You can actually look at there's this platform known as public.com in the US. They're like killing it right now. So we want to sort of do something on those lines where basically it is more of a social trading platform where people can look at each other's portfolios, follow each other, etc. So in that itself, I think we would want to include some financial experts and influencers also making their own portfolios. But then again, I mean, because these would be influencers, it's imperative for us to understand that, what kind of things are they promoting? Is it even good for us as a brand? Is it just way too risky? Or is it just, would it, cause people making some wrong decisions? So I think that's something that we would have to add as a filter, additional filter there. But probably in this entire social trading arena, we would want to plug these influencers and also experts in.
So, like there would be two elements. One is if you like an influencer and you trust their stock picks, then you have a way to transparently see what they hold because they could have a portfolio listed there. Correct. So you can transparently see that ye bech raha hai, ye khareed raha hai, whatever he's long and short on. And the other way could be an influencer's portfolio is available to you with a single click. Like if you want to...
Yeah. Yeah, you want to basically copy paste that entire portfolio, you can do that. You want to customize it, you can do that.
So in which case, maybe some commission could go to the influencer as a...
I'm not sure. So again, there would be regulatory hurdles in that if that's done, because if you're earning commission, then you're advising, and then that's a whole another...
Okay, so you need that license before...
Yeah. So you need to make sure that either you're not advising at all, so then everything is just very smooth. You don't have to take any additional license, and it's not so regulated. You leave everything to the people. And so I think that's where we'll have to figure out what do we want to start with first. And probably we would want to avoid this commission thing, because then it's technically then advising and taking fees from people.
But what's the hook for an influencer then? Like, why would they come and...
Again, we would be paying these influencers then.
Okay. Like a fixed subscription.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Maybe on the basis of number of users. Yeah. And all. So we would be paying instead of users paying.
Okay. So, you know, what's your fundraise roadmap like? Like, you know, what do you think you'll need to raise to really achieve the vision? And, you know, like, maybe you could potentially look at a unicorn status in 18 to 24 months, like considering the market size that you're going after.
Yeah, so I think fundraise is not much of a problem, because one, the market opportunity is amazing here in India. I mean, there's just so much of untapped market. We're already seeing an explosion of retail investors lately. Second is that fintech is a hot industry right now, I think, because of so much innovation happening. I'm not just saying that all of that, you know, valuation bubble and stuff that people are talking about. I think in general, also the innovation is at its peak right now. So fundraise is definitely, I mean, not something that we're so bothered about, but I feel that we would need, to be able to achieve all of that we have in our roadmap and to be able to serve our customers to our best and moving very fast. I think startups are all, I think, about speed lately. It's not, I mean, it's not the one who has a lot of capital wins, but the one who is faster wins most of the time. So that's what we have in mind. And I think probably we would be eyeing a Series A somewhere about, 6 to 8 months down the line. We have, I think, plans.
How much would you want to raise in Series A? Like, 30-40 million.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I think, what industry standards are supposedly about for these investment apps lately. But yes, definitely average would be about 30-40 million, because that's what we would need to be able to at least function for 2-3 years and to be able to build all those things that we want and maintain the quality of the app and the brand itself. Like, we want to really heavily invest into financial education. So we have a lot of plans in mind, and I think that's where most of our funds would be utilized in, and I feel that will eventually create. Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Like, you want to invest in financial education? Like, you want to create video lessons?
Yeah, all sorts of maybe content, all sorts of maybe even courses. There's just so much that we can do. I mean, there's just so many ideas we have, plans we have, but I think one is that requires a lot of money, that requires a lot of cash flow. And second, I think, is we want to also wait out and see what is the kind of financial awareness people need. Because there's just so much information available already on Google. And yet when we talk to people on over calls and stuff, and we ask them that, you know, I mean, surprisingly for us, a lot of these people, they don't even know what mutual funds are sometimes. And I realize, so then that's what we have to figure out, that, you know, what is that kind of awareness that we want to bring? Like, what segment do we want to cater first? And I think that's where we want to invest the most, because I think indirectly that creates a cycle for you. I mean, more awareness, and then there are more people who want to invest, and ultimately there's more demand for the services.
This was The Spotlight, presented by The Podium. To listen to more such interesting conversations, log on to thepodium.in.